Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Allendary, and I'm an infectious disease specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Hope Hickerson, and I'm a health education specialist and reporter. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician,
that's me, and a health education expert,
that's me, talk to healthcare professionals about what you need to know about COVID-19, as well as community and public health.
For more information about Noise Filter, your public health podcast, and to watch and share our incredible informative animations, please visit us at noisefiltershow.com.
And if you like what you hear, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to us. So let's get started.
Schools should emphasize testing over major quarantines. Now that many school districts in America have returned to in-person learning, managing the spread of COVID has become a major and messy priority. When a student tests positive for COVID, quarantining the child and their close contacts can be incredibly disruptive for parents who no longer work remotely or for siblings who must switch to remote instruction. An op-ed in Vox makes the case for a different approach to these situations.
When students in American schools get COVID, the process usually looks something like this. The school identifies the student's close contacts. Close contacts can mean something different depending on the school. And in some cases, it could only be children that the infected student sat nearby. In others, it could be their entire class. These protocols can vary for vaccinated students, but children younger than 12 are mostly unvaccinated right now because the vaccinations just opened up for that age group. In Los Angeles, the first week of school saw more than 3,000 quarantines.
Jeez. This can be disrupting to children's educations as schools rely less and less heavily on remote learning processes. Some states like Utah and Massachusetts have implemented test-to-stay protocols instead. In school districts that opt in, close contacts of an infected student do not have to quarantine. Instead, they can keep coming to school as long as they take a rapid COVID test every day for 7 days. If they test negative, they can attend the class as normal. If they test positive, they have to quarantine.
And what do you think about that, Dr. Derry? Like, is that okay protocol?
It's hard to say. I mean, I understand the importance of getting kids to school as rapidly as possible and that quarantines are incredibly disruptive. And so, of course, I would rather try to keep people. Well, one, everybody needs to be vaccinated. Two, everybody needs to be wearing masks. Mm-hmm. So yes. Like, those are incredibly big tools that we have. But yes, it does make sense.
Okay, makes sense. A study in England published in The Lancet found that schools using daily testing models have similar COVID case rates to schools that quarantine their students. But there are some roadblocks to more widespread implementation of test-to-stay models.
And one of those obstacles is that the CDC hasn't recommended that approach yet, saying that they need more research. And so that's kind of my hesitation as well. And that's what I was like, there's no data to support it, but we're in the midst of this pandemic. So sometimes we just have to go with what actually makes sense. And mm-hmm. It does actually make sense. So according to Vox, these problems are symptomatic of American reluctance to embrace testing. In order to realistically control the spread of COVID, this must change. And I think that one is to collect as much data as we can so that mm-hmm. the CDC can make recommendations that make sense, but then also that the real life situation that's out there is that we're going to have school districts that are going to just eschew all public health advice. And mm-hmm. we still, I think, are obligated as public health practitioners to give those individuals the best advice that we can. We have to meet them where they are, even though they're not taking the COVID protocols to the max. It would be great to have one advice that fits all, but that's just mm-hmm. not the reality. And the way that America looks right now, it's divided, unfortunately, mm-hmm. and it's divided mostly along political lines. And really, how you manage, and by you meaning school districts or public health offices or what have you, but how you manage your COVID response is largely defined by how you view politics. Unfortunately, we still are obligated to offer the best advice possible. And again, we have to meet people where they are. So any thoughts on any of that, Hope?
You were talking about what's actually happening, right? And that's been my biggest issue when it comes to schools and their policies, because the policies look good on one hand, but what's actually happening is completely different. Because here in Louisiana, since the governor made the mask mandate optional now, the schools have followed suit. And so the mask wearing is optional in the school, which is essentially telling people you don't have to wear your mask anymore, because right. that's what's happening. And so I have told my son, the only time you take your mask off is when you're outside and when you're eating, and keep your mask on every other time of the day. But out of his class, there's maybe out of a class of 15, there's maybe three other children that regularly wear their mask. And so what does that mean for him?
Yeah. How are the children? So we're talking about your 6-year-old.
Yes.
How do the other children who are unmasked, do they say anything to your son, or do they?
Oh yes. He says all the time, teachers included, oh, you don't have to wear your mask anymore. It's okay. Mm. You could take it off. And so I had to have a role playing conversation with him. Like, so if someone tells you, even an adult tells you, it's okay, you could take your mask off, what do you say? I had to have a conversation with him because he did not know how to respond, because so many people was telling him that it was okay to take the mask off in the middle of a pandemic.
Tips for managing needle anxiety. Now, as the COVID vaccines have become available, some eligible recipients have been hesitant to get the jab because of anxiety around needles. According to NPR, this is a relatively common 1 in 10 Americans experience this fear of needles. And I may say that my wife is definitely in that 1 in 10 group. She's nodding right now, acknowledging it. This anxiety can range from relatively mild to mental health diagnosis called blood injection injury phobia. I didn't even know there was a name for it. A psychology professor from the University of Guelph interviewed on NPR said that COVID vaccine effort presents an opportunity to promote comfort around needles. In order to make needle-averse patients feel comfortable, it's important for the physical space where they receive the vaccine to be welcoming, ensuring that the temperatures aren't too stuffy and that physical wait times aren't so long that they could increase anxiety. For clinicians administering the vaccines, there are also some strategies for making patients feel at ease. It is important to communicate with the recipient to see how they might be able to get adjusted, perhaps looking away or examining the needle before the jab. It's also helpful to describe that the patient will have pain if they do feel pain, and it is important to be honest to build trust with the recipient. There are also a few ways vaccine recipients can manage needle anxiety. The first is the CARD method. That's C-A-R-D, which stands for comfort, ask, relax, and distract, which provides categories to plan coping mechanisms, like bringing an item for comfort, asking about the experience, relaxing, and distracting yourself. And if patients have a history of fainting or getting dizzy around needles, muscle tension exercises can prevent the rapid changes in blood pressure that do cause fainting.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast, follow us on social media, and to leave us a review, letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Hickerson, at www.hopehickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at the Dr. Derry, that's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
You can follow us at Noise Filter on Instagram, Noise Filter NOLA on Twitter, and to see and share our amazing animations and to find out more information about us and the show, go to noisefiltershow.com.
Just as a reminder, COVID-19 and the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, do share the same risk factors. We are so grateful to our sponsors, Access Health Louisiana, and to the South Central AETC. You can learn more about them at www.scaetc.org. Hope, any last words?
Yes, yeah, stay well out there, folks, and continue taking the steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, and seeing your healthcare provider regularly.
And protect yourselves and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. As an infectious diseases doctor, I also want to share with the healthcare providers in our audience that the HIV Care Tools app was recently launched by the AIDS Education and Training Center, the AETC. And it's a fantastic tool for ensuring your patients have access to the best standard of care. I encourage you all to check it out. And remember, health is a human right.